Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Hour 2, live in L.A. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. I've got something right now in the Cowboys. I'm going to save this. It's so hard for me to save this because it's so good. I'm going to do it after class. I don't know how I'm doing this because I'm terrible at that. You put a cookie in front of me, I'm going to eat it.
That is true.
So I had to literally tell one of my kids, stop baking. The house is full of muffins and scones. I'm, you know, can't stop eating.
Scones are my favorite.
Oh, love them. My British mom had them in the house all the time. We didn't have donuts. I didn't have a donut until I was 40. We just didn't have them in the house.
Hot take. Not a huge donut person.
Are you?
Well, look, no. Glaze is how you drove. Don't overreact. I obviously like donuts.
Yeah.
But like people that can just like eat 3 or 4 donuts, like just hammer down some donuts. Yeah. I can't do that. But I can't handle that much sugar though. I have like one, you know,
I bet
sugar
you
jelly-filled donut, and I'm good.
I bet you I've eaten less than 5 donuts in my life. I've never been to Arby's.
That's awful.
I'm just telling you.
What's happening? You've never been to Arby's, and what do you mean you've only had 5 donuts? You've never been to Krispy Kreme when the light comes on?
Yeah, probably once. I've never been there. I've seen a box. I don't need donuts. I was not raised on donuts. I was a scone kid because my mom... Mm. She made scones. So that's what I like bagels and scones. I'm not a donut guy.
So you've never had a late night and ordered an entire thing of.
Oh, God, no.
Like here I am saying I don't eat that many donuts, but I have definitely put down a few in that situation. You're missing out.
You know what? I'm going to go to the cowboy thing. I can't stop. I can't contain myself.
You have no control.
I have this thing on Belichick. Forget it. It doesn't matter. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Here's my cowboy thing. I can't stop myself. This is why you can't put baked goods in front of me. So I said the first time I watched the Cowboys play this year, I said, they're faster. My eyes are telling me they're a faster team. Speed. Look at this. This thing never shuts off, people. Dan Quinn, this is according to Ed Werder. He's a reporter guy. Dan Quinn, the new coordinator for the Cowboys, has transformed the defense. They lead the NFL 8 turnovers. He was always a zone coach. But Quinn, using man-to-man coverage now, almost 65%. According to stats and information from another sports company that never gives anybody credit, so I'm not giving them any, the Cowboys have an NFL high 10 defensive players with a max speed of 19 miles an hour. My dad was an optometrist. These are supervision eyes. They had 3 through week 3 last year. And now they have 10. So, you know how like if you're a Bitcoin investor on the internet, you know, they put those things in your eyes. Those lightning eyes. We should do that for me. Super NFL eyes. I see amazing things. So they are the fastest team in the league. Not saying the best, but their speed on television just jumps off the screen to me. Like, God, Dallas, you can beat them on plays, but their catch-up speed from their corners is fantastic.
They are noticeably different from last year.
Yeah, they run really well. Like last year, it was the offense had the speed and the defense was molasses.
Yeah.
Remember that OBJ reverse? It was like the longest yard or something. It looked like a movie. It was so bad. Now, Dallas got dudes that can just run. They can flat run. Their linebackers run. Their corners run. Their safeties run.
They play with a lot of energy, too.
All right. Let's bring in Joel Klatt. Teach him some football here. The voice of college football at Fox. Boy, was he good on that Soldier Field Notre Dame Wisconsin game.
There was so much going on.
And
in the last couple of minutes,
what?
There was so much going
There's
on.
There's a lot to absorb.
Whew.
I know. It's kind of
5 donuts in your life? You just shot your credibility before your big news about the 10 players that run 19 miles an hour or longer.
So let me start with Notre Dame, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because you and I have both been big advocates of Brian Kelly. We think he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
But in the world we live in, if you don't win a championship, you can't beat Alabama, you're no good. If you took Alabama out of the sport, I think Notre Dame can go toe-to-toe last 5 years with everybody, including Georgia. I've seen it twice. This is actually, in my opinion, not a very good Notre Dame team.
This version to this year?
No. They're
not as good as they've been in the last couple of years.
Alabama can just reload. Notre Dame doesn't. They have down years. I think they're just coaching their way to wins. I don't think they're that much better than Wisconsin. I don't think they're a 42-13 better team than Wisconsin.
No, their game plan was terrific last week, and it was so what's the word? It was heartening to go meet with them on Thursday last week, and we went in there because I never get a chance to actually go meet in person with Notre Dame. It's always calls because we don't do their home games. So because the game was in Chicago, I thought I'm going to go out a day early and go to Notre Dame and meet with them in person. And I'm so glad that I did, because you actually get kind of a better feel for the culture, the atmosphere, and for the people in general versus doing a Zoom or doing a conference call. And I came away from that even more impressed with Notre Dame than I had been before. And it was largely due to the fact that when I meet with coaches in person, you get a really good sense based on what game plan that they're about to use in the game. Listen, I watch the film. I know what I'm looking at. And so I can tell when a game plan's not going to be great.
Right.
Right? I mean, you just do. And you can tell when a guy's ego is getting in the way of his game plan. Well, I don't care what they do on defense. We'll be able to run the ball. Okay. No, you won't. Right? And that would have been the case if Notre Dame said, listen, we're Notre Dame. We're going to run the ball against Wisconsin. And to their credit, they didn't do that. They said, listen, if we hand the ball off, it's going to be a token handoff. Jack's going to have to throw the ball 40, 45 times in order to do it. And they had a game plan that was setting themselves up to win, and then they won.
Yeah.
And I think that in large part, that belief seeps down into their players. You know, and obviously that return, that kick return from Chris Tyree is really what kind of blew the game wide open. And obviously Pine did a nice job coming in. But it was set up by the fact that their plan was correct from the get-go. The only reason they were in the game 10-10 to start the fourth quarter or whatever it was is because they weren't trying to sit there and run their head into a brick wall the entire game. So I agree with you. I think Notre Dame is probably a year or two away from being really, really good, but this team is maximizing itself based on the fact that the coaches are putting them in great positions to succeed.
So this week you have Michigan at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. I get asked about – there's a lot of Michigan graduates apparently out in California.
Okay.
I don't know if that's where they're migrating to, but everywhere I go, there's Michigan people out here. And on Saturdays, if I go to the grocery store, there's Michigan hats. There's somebody, hey, what do you think of Harbaugh? And I'm like, listen, he can't get the quarterback right. I think he's done a lot right. He can't figure it out. And I can't figure out how he can't figure it out because he's a former quarterback. Don't tell me. The school had Tom Brady. It had Kerry Collins. They've had good NFL quarterbacks.
Kerry Collins was a Penn State guy.
Oh, my bad.
They had Brian Greasy.
Elvin Skirball.
Then it was like Drew Henson and Brady.
They've had good quarterbacks.
They've had pretty good quarterbacks.
By Big Ten standards, excellent. So let's just talk Michigan right now. And I want to talk a little bit about the offense. They do appear to have a little more juice.
Yeah. So, first of all, they did a great self-scout in the offseason. And they realized what they were doing well and what they weren't doing well. They threw the ball too often last year and thought that they were going to spread it out and become one of these high-flying teams that could go and score a lot of points in this spread system. And Josh Gattis did that at Alabama, and then it wasn't paying off at Michigan. It just wasn't in their DNA. And while he liked some of the pieces that they have, you know what they've done? They went back to the run game, but not just the run game that he brought. There was this marriage between the spread run game that Josh Gattis has and what Harbaugh was at Stanford, which is I know this is technical stuff, but heavy gap team. They're going to pull linemen, and they're going to get downhill. And so now they're trying to marry that up, similar to what Oklahoma has done the last couple of years, similar to what the Baltimore Ravens have done, by the way. Very similar to what John Harbaugh has done with Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens. And that marriage of committing to the run game but also expanding how they're attacking in the run game has really benefited them. Now, what remains to be seen is when that gets taken away, can they throw the ball? Has the quarterback developed? And last week, it didn't. They only completed one pass in the second half against Rutgers. One. Now, Rutgers is vastly improved under Greg Schiano. But I can't wait to see this week when they go up against what I feel like is somewhat of an immovable force in the front seven of that Wisconsin defense. Can Michigan go out there and throw the football to move it? Because last week, Notre Dame told me, we ain't running the ball on these guys. Not, you know, they're too good. They're too big. Right. And so this week with Michigan, will they be able to throw the football? I think is a fascinating storyline going into this game.
By the way, Saturday at noon, Fox, Michigan at Wisconsin. I'll be watching. I love these Midwest college football games.
Do you? I feel like you always rip on the Midwest.
No. Hey, listen, I fly over it all the time and admire it.
Unbelievable. So, that type of
it's very elitist.
You know what people in the Midwest do that I also do weekly? Enjoy donuts. You're welcome. I love donuts, and so do you.
Hey, I like beer. They like it there. Okay, let's segue to this.
Do you mix it in with your wine?
No, I don't like wine.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm hearing about, you know, Alabama's going to roll everybody. And I don't really take, when you go to Florida in the SEC, when you go to an SEC road game, yes, that's when Florida can play with Alabama.
Sure.
Okay, but I do, when I watch Georgia play, mm-hmm. and this is about the third time in 4 years, I do look up and say, if you switch jerseys, I'm not sure I could tell much. It does look like Georgia and Bama feel like a cut above.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. And I think, now having said that, I also think that the sport is in a really good spot because there's a lot of teams vying for those next couple of spots.
Yeah.
Right? I think that that 3, 4, 5, 6 is somewhat interchangeable. I think that even more teams are going to have a shot at the playoff. But you're right. Alabama and Georgia seem a cut above, and I can't wait for this matchup because this is going to be the first version of Georgia where Kirby has adjusted on the offensive side and can also be explosive. Remember, he was just trying to go in there and say, okay, we're going to out Alabama by just playing great defense and running the football and doing what Bama did in 2012. And the problem was is that he didn't realize that Nick had done an amazing job of evolving as a program and becoming a program that could go beat Ole Miss, whatever it was last year, 62-47,
right.
You know, and also win the big tough games. But that's why I'm so fascinated with this Georgia team this year, is that with JT Daniels, who's completing over 70% of his passes, he can get vertical down the field.
Yeah.
They can be explosive on offense. Meanwhile, they have a defense that's only given up like one touchdown.
No, it's like you can watch Georgia's defense. It's all NFL bodies.
That's exactly right.
It's all NFL guys.
That's exactly right. So this version, this matchup this year, and I expect to see Georgia and Alabama in the SEC championship, and I expect both of them to also go to the playoff. But this year feels different just because Georgia has also evolved. And so we're going to see Kirby's first opportunity to play on what I would say similar footing with Bama.
Okay, so, you know, I like to be measured in my opinions. And every year
telling America you've only had 5 donuts in your life is not measured.
Probably 3.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Hey. I don't even know what to do with this right now.
But I watched Spencer Rattler.
Okay.
And everybody's like, that guy's a number one pick. And my takeaway is, oh, no. I don't know.
Take the lightning bolts out of your eyes.
Okay, time out. Big arm. Sloppy mechanics. You guys all got this guy as...
You're totally blinded to the problems in front of Spencer Rattler, which is fine. Listen, I get it. I get it. You can see speed randomly from an NFL defense, which, congratulations, you did. You saw it. Your lion eyes, you
like
know,
X-ray
they
vision.
Didn't lie to you. X-ray vision. Apparently on Saturdays, your X-ray vision takes the day off for college football. But I think that the problem isn't with Rattler for OU.
Okay.
I think that he is special from a talent perspective. And yes, he can force the ball at times, but the problem with Oklahoma is their offensive line.
Okay.
Their offensive line has been atrocious this year. And I don't normally say that about college kids.
Oklahoma
it's been terrible.
Almost always has a great O-line.
Which has been the surprising part, which is why Rattler, everyone's like, what's wrong with Rattler? You just assume that everything else is similar with Oklahoma.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, they can't block down linemen. Akeem Mezidor, number 90 for West Virginia, was unblocked about 5 or 6 times. They don't do a good job getting movement on the double team. So when they're trying to pull their guard and tackle around for their bread and butter play, the GT play, they can't get them going up the field. The backs have guys in their face. Rattler has guys in their face. And it's a chain reaction. You see, if you can't run the football at Oklahoma, and I know Riley's an air raid guy. He's not. He's a run-oriented coach. And the reason that is because when he runs it well, he gets to the play-action game. That creates the explosive plays.
Yeah.
When you've got play play action, now you can also be two-dimensional in your passing game and drop back and pass without pass rushers coming after you. They've got none of that right now.
All right.
And Rattler has almost no chance to succeed. Their fan base was chanting for their backup quarterback last week, and that was an atrocious look for what I feel like is a very good fan base. Stop chanting for the backup quarterback to go out there and have guys in his lap. You know what's going to be different for Caleb Williams? Nothing. Nothing, because you can't block in front of him.
Okay, that's fair. This isn't even speculation. This is not a rumor. It is not speculation. But it's an interesting talking point.
Okay.
So of the 7 or 8 great jobs...
In college football?
Yeah.
Okay.
Regardless of what people will tell you in the Big Ten or the SEC, USC remains one. Why?
There's no doubt.
Because they're in the second or third best recruiting state, and they're the biggest brand in the state. Every time they get the right coach, it takes about an hour, and so they're great.
I would argue, just to your point, there's only a couple of schools that are at any moment 3 years away from going to a playoff. USC is one of those teams.
I totally agree. Now, let me ask you this. Again, I am not trying to ignite something here. But Penn State is not in that, though very strong. They're in the next level of 10. If you were a coach there... And you could go from recruiting.
But I'm not trying to ignite anything, guys.
I'm just saying if I was James Franklin, I would feel there is a ceiling. Now, it's not a low ceiling,
okay.
But there's a ceiling at Penn State, and there really isn't one at USC. Would you listen to USC if they called?
I think it would be foolish for him not to listen.
Oh, that's all I'm asking.
It'd be foolish for anyone not to listen. I mean, that's the only
Saban's way. Saban's 70, so I wouldn't listen. Saban doesn't listen.
Well, yeah, I think you can put him in a different category,
because of
his age and his success. Like, he's the greatest coach in college football history.
That's right.
Like,
let's Saban done. And maybe Debo out.
Yeah, and I think Dabo would probably listen, although he's culturally too good of a fit at Clemson.
Yeah.
Having said that, everybody should listen if they call you. If you're Jeff Hafley at Boston College, Mario Cristobal at
now,
Oregon.
Now, wait, I don't like that. Time out.
Why wouldn't you listen if you're Mario Cristobal?
Okay.
Just because Phil Knight would be mad at you?
That's like having in that's a big voice. I don't want him. That's like
I don't disagree, but you at least listen. You take the call.
I don't think I take the call if I'm Mario Cristobal. I'm not going to let that out because it'll get out, by the way. Everything gets out because yappers out there in the media. Most aren't like me, journalists.
Journalists, apparently still go blind on Saturdays.
My dad took days off as an optometrist. Okay, so what I'm saying is there are relationships. That's why married guys shouldn't go to the club. Don't even go there. Don't even go into the club. You're married. I don't even want Mario Cristobal to take a call from USC.
But why doesn't that also apply to James Franklin? He's married too, but you want him to just waltz right into the club.
No, but
you want him to walk into the club and be like, yo, what's up?
No, the difference is they're both about...
Bottle in the back corner!
The difference is Phil Knight...
Put a sparkler in it too! I'm here, guys!
I don't even know what the hell that means. Literally, I eat Fig Newtons when I go to the club. So my point is, Phil Knight is different. Phil Knight is the most important booster in the history of the sport. You don't screw with Phil Knight. You don't care. You married guys. I know when you walk by the Kitty Cat Lounge.
You married. Like, you're not married?
No, I am. And when I drive by the Kitty Cat Lounge, you know what I say? Meow. Not interested. You married guys that pull into the parking lot and say, you know, I'm just going to go out there into the club.
Oh,
it's like, no. No, you don't.
The reason I'm so, dumbfounded right now is you literally just said James Franklin should walk into the club
because he doesn't have Phil Knight.
Sparkler.
He wouldn't tick off Phil Knight. He'd tick off rural Pennsylvania.
He goes again, bashing on rural Pennsylvania.
Those donut eaters. am I wrong here?
Yes, you're wrong. Absolutely, Mario should take a look at that job.
Oh, I think you're crazy. You don't even take that call. If that gets out to Phil Knight.
What's the better job?
USC.
But he can't take the can't take the call?
Be way better to be married to George Clooney than me, but my wife shouldn't go and hang out with him.
Oh, she absolutely should because she would get donuts and all sorts of stuff that she's
you're out of here. All right, Joel Klatt is doing Michigan at Wisconsin. It's great.
Magnum in the back. That's for me. Franklin James.
That's a language I do not speak. I don't even know what I thought sparklers were one day of the year on 4th of July.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
This Saturday, it's another huge slate of college football on Fox. Join the Big Noon Kickoff crew for the biggest pregame party of the weekend, live from Madison, followed by Big Noon Saturday as Wisconsin hosts number 14 Michigan. Then Spencer Rattler and the 6th-ranked Sooners face K-State. It all starts Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern on Fox.
I said this about the Raiders. I want to be wrong on the Raiders because I think the Raiders are really good for the NFL. If you had to shrink the league to 15 teams, Raiders would be one of those I would put in because I think every league needs a rebel, a contrarian brand. The Raiders have almost been anti-corporate and the NFL's very corporate. I feel the same way about Michigan. I want Michigan to win. Michigan winning in college football is great for the sport. The Raiders winning in the NFL is really good for the sport. The league doesn't get more popular or more interesting if the Bengals win. They don't. Or the Texans or the Jags. It's nothing against the city or the people. But the Raiders have this deep, iconic, rebellious sort of angle, and I think it's really valuable, and I feel the same way about Michigan. It doesn't mean they have to win national championships, but if they could beat Ohio State more, it would just, you can't go 9 years and not beat them or whatever it is. Like if they beat Ohio State every third year, because Ohio State's a better program, football program. But I'm crossing my fingers that this version of Michigan is what I think it can be. Enjoy with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, there's been a lot of conversation and concern about the availability of some players this upcoming NBA season due to vaccination restrictions in certain states like California and New York. And NBA reporter Mark Stein tweeted this morning, NBA spokesman Mike Bass says, any player who elects not to comply with local vaccination mandates will not be paid for the games that he misses.
Well, that's a thing, and that's a pretty big move now. So you want to not get vaccinated, you're not going to get paid. That's a pretty serious mandate.
Well, yeah, you won't be paid for the games that you miss due to not being vaccinated in the cities where it is required. So New York City and San Francisco both require COVID vaccinations. You have to have at least one shot in order to play. So for a player like Andrew Wiggins or Kyrie Irving, you're talking about crossing the $300,000 mark per game to miss because of their contracts, because they have salaries in excess of $30 million this season. So if they were to miss those games because they're not vaccinated this year, that they're going to be, it's going to be significant. Like it's not a small thing, especially because those are the cities and the teams that they play for.
I'm not a huge fan of mandates just in life for Americans. I think this one is serious and we need to have some mandates. But just to show you, for those who doubt the vaccine, and everybody's an expert, when the COVID first hit, 50,000 Americans dead, 100. When people were comparing it to the flu, 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000. And then the vaccine, people, the number of people taking the vaccine went way up. Like people in California that are like over 75, it's like 85%.
Right.
Young kids are not, see themselves as more bulletproof. But we were, and I don't know what the numbers are today. I still think it's in the 600,000, 675,000, 680. But we've been in that area for like five months. Why? Because it's pretty obvious the death number. Not that it's plateaued, but I mean, we got to a 500,000. It felt like really, really fast. And then vaccinations take hold, and especially the older people, and that's where it's the most punitive, right? Like you can argue about kids under 12, it doesn't appear to be that serious, right? The numbers don't lie, or people that are vaccinated outdoors probably don't need to wear masks. So you can make those arguments. But for all the experts out here, I check the worldometer, that meter for COVID, and it doesn't grow nearly as fast since COVID vaccines, whichever one you do, It's been in the 600,000s for a while now, and I think that, to me, we can argue all about mandates and stuff, but and I'm just an amateur. I don't know anything. I'm just watching the math on it. It does feel like most Americans, and we should credit 90% of NFL players, and I think 90% of NBA players,
The numbers are much higher than in society. Yeah, and that's become the conversation now, is like, should we focus on this small amount of players that aren't vaccinated rather than focusing on, you know, the larger amount of players who have gotten vaccinated?
Yeah, the pro athletes are way better than the national public.
There is more positive to the story than there is negative. The reason that we're talking about it is because you do have significant players.
Yeah, like stars.
Significant contributors and stars who are not vaccinated. And because of the teams that they play for, they will not be available for their home games and some away games. Like a significant amount of the season, you're not going to be available to do it. So whatever your opinion is about the vaccine mandates, it's truly irrelevant. Because they play for a league. We work for a business.
But you have to have it.
And you have to have it. Yeah. I'm not all about all this extra control either. But I'm also not a doctor. Yeah. So if they're working with professional doctors, you know, who have done this their entire lives and have earned accredited degrees and studies and like can speak a whole different language we don't speak, and they're telling them this is what they need to do, then that's what they need to do. But we now have an answer on something that was very significant. Are they going to lose money? And they
now
will.
It is. It's a real thing.
It's going to change the outcome of that. So Aaron Rodgers had an interesting assessment of last week's win over the Lions when he was reflecting on their week one disaster. Let's take a listen. We've heard this before.
I think we maybe tried to show that we cared a little bit more tonight.
Obviously you cared last week, but do you feel like it looked like you didn't last week? Is that kind of what you're implying?
I just think people like to say a lot of and it's nice to come back in here after a game like that.
Now, I thought that was a very interesting interaction. Keep that in mind when we move on to the next soundbite, which is, of course, after that thrilling win over the 49ers, 37 seconds, doing what only Aaron Rodgers can do. He was on the Pat McAfee show and had some words for people who doubt his motivation.
Well, it's a rough night, I guess, for some of those he doesn't care campers. I love the game, man. I love competing. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like having the ball in your hands with a chance to win the game late in the game. That's what we live for. That's what we dream about.
So here's my takeaway on this. It wasn't by the way, I don't consider myself the enemy of Aaron Rodgers. I've said before, I do not want him to retire. The game's way more interesting with Aaron.
Right.
I don't think it was a rough night. What people tired of was Aaron taking discussions that should be in a therapist's office. We don't, out to the public. I love angry Aaron when he's yelling at his center. I love happy Aaron. I do think if I was on my show all the time talking about the meaning of life, that's best for my therapist's office. And Aaron spent a lot of time talking about being reflective and his Zen space. I don't think people care about that. It comes across as condescending and I'm smartest guy in the room. Angry Aaron, we all like. Yelling at his teammates. Happy Aaron, I think we all like. It's not that people were like, I hope they lose because Aaron doesn't care. I think a lot of the pushback was on, stop talking about silence is wisdom and then ripping your team every week. Like Aaron got into kind of a, you've seen that new Elton John commercial? He got into a judgy space and he was airing his judginess outward. It should have been in a therapist's office behind a closed door. And it was like, there was a few months where it was like, I'm kind of done with the Zen. Like, keep it to, I don't want to hear about your Zen all the time. Just like either love something, hate something, have an emotion. But I don't think anybody's rooting against Aaron. I think you listen to him all summer and you're like, does football matter to him? He said it was a 50-50 call on retirement.
See, my perspective on it and why I played the first one is that because Aaron is talking so much, which, listen, we love.
Yeah.
Okay, I have no problem with it at all. But you're saying things and then contradicting yourself. Nobody said, I didn't hear anyone saying it looks like Aaron doesn't care. We just reacted to a blowout loss in week one. That's what happens when you lose badly in week one and you are a contending team that was just an NFC championship game and you just won an MVP against a team that most of us thought were going to be struggling this year in the Saints.
Yeah.
it's a reaction to a loss. I didn't hear anyone saying Aaron Rodgers doesn't care.
Well, they said
now, there was the talk about how much does the offseason drama affect that.
Yeah.
But it was never about, like, he doesn't care about football. He's clearly there playing, so he cares. But then you're the one, you said it, that you wanted to look like you cared a little bit more tonight. Those words came from Aaron Rodgers. So this idea of, like, it's a bad night for the people that, like, who is this? Who are these people? Who are they? Can I meet? I've never met them. Who are these people, like, root against Aaron Rodgers?
Outside of Chicago.
Yes.
Or Minnesota. Like,
outside of the people in your division. You're amazing. You're one of the best players in NFL history. Who's rooting against you?
Nobody is. I do think there are conversations. When Aaron said there's wisdom in silence, I think he should have been more silent this summer with his reflective Zen state, because I don't think that's just not a, I don't want to hear Tom Brady waxing philosophic about, do I love the game? Angry Tom, all support. Fired up Tom, all support. I don't want to hear your therapist office stuff. I'm not into it. Like Kevin Durant.
That stuff doesn't bother me. And none of this bothers me, actually. Like, I'm all for the difference in personalities and the expressiveness and authenticity. It doesn't bother me. I am not triggered. I'm just confused as to where this, like, angry mob of take down Aaron Rodgers people are. Like, actually, that was probably Packers fans this offseason dealing with all the drama. I live for this drama.
Yeah.
I thrive in this. That's my toxic trait. So I don't care about any of it. I don't think he's even going to be there next year. But I'm looking for this tough night. Who? I don't like imaginary haters. There's enough real haters out there.
Right.
Like, you're imagining that this, like, mob is coming for you. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, Aaron can be sensitive. Kevin Durant can be sensitive. 99% of sports fans are rooting for KD and Aaron to succeed because they're brilliant, and we love watching brilliant athletes.
Also on my fantasy team, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Every week I'm rooting for that. They host the Steelers this weekend and are favored by 6.5, according to Fox Bet. So Tom Brady is going back to Foxborough this weekend. We are all looking forward to this.
Yeah.
He only needs 68 yards to break Drew Brees' NFL career passing yardage record of 80,358 yards. And Brees talked about it yesterday. He said, I'm a firm believer that records are meant to be broken. I'd be all for Brady just launching the first play of the game. Just go ahead and get it out of the way. He needs, 68 yards? There's no doubt. I think he can get it knocked down pretty quick. I can't think of a guy who has invested more in his career and his preparation and kind of what he's meant for the game.
Boy, the that book is Favre, Brees, and Brady have about everything in there, don't they? Peyton Manning's probably got a few. I don't look at the NFL record
Brees'
book.
Records are Brees
and,
ridiculous.
Brees, Brady, and Favre have a lot of them. I'm not sure if Peyton does. Maybe Peyton does too.
I'm sure he does. But I mean, there's the longevity and the amount of numbers and players that they've played with and success that they've had. I can't wait for this game. It's going to be...
I think it's going to be a blowout. I'm the only one.
No.
The line is crazy.
They're favored by 7, according to Fox Bet. The Bucks are. So,
do you know, rookie quarterbacks against veteran quarterbacks this year, rookies are 0-12. The only rookie quarterback win this year was against another rookie, Mac Jones against Zach Wilson. I can't believe the line's only 7. I mean, Brady's played in Foxborough.
People are really considering that it's going to be an emotional game for Brady.
I think you're right. Like, this is not one of my blazing 5 picks. When I can't figure a line out, like, I don't understand why the line's on 11. I don't understand it. I don't get it. So Vegas must know something I don't know, because I can't figure that line out.
I think it's the emotion, and they're just, giving respect to Belichick at home.
But Brady came off a loss. He's going to be ticked off and more focused.
Oh, I mean,
it's one thing if they beat the Rams by 40.
But it's an interesting dynamic, because he is coming off of a loss, and he is going to be pissed off. But then he's going to, like, the most emotionally like triggering game of the season.
I want to talk to a sharp. I'm going to talk to a sharp. What can't explain the line? Doesn't make any sense. By the way, I thought the line was weird last week, and I was a sucker. Washington football team was getting like 8.5 against Buffalo, and I'm like, 8.5 is what you give the Jags. And,
well, Washington's their Buffalo defense hasn't
rolled them.
They haven't been playing up to their capabilities.
No. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it, You listen to it, I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
SimpliSafeColin.com, 20% off your new system. They've got now wireless outdoor security cameras, all the advanced tech you'd need. That is SimpliSafeColin.com. So Seth Wickersham, new book out, Better to be Feared. It's about the Patriot dynasty. Belichick does not come off looking great in this book, at least the excerpts. The book may be more balanced, but the early indications are it's Belichick takes a lot of the heat here for the breakup. And, you know, such is life. You know, they often say, I've said it, you know this saying, is that your greatest strength in life is often your greatest weakness. And, you know, Bill's strength is he treats Brady like one of the guys. And then Bill's weakness became Bill still treats Tom like one of the guys. He's an American icon. And that you will hear this from time to time. And it's understandable that most people can't relate to this. Most people will never relate to this. Is you have a friend, and since there's only about eight of these people in the country in sports, your friend becomes a superstar. Not like an all-star baseball player. An all-star baseball player, Mike Trout could put a cap and glasses on, walk around L.A., and nobody cares. But you'll hear people say this all the time about people. Well, my friend got successful and famous, and he changed. Yes, because his life changed. He can't go out in public. He can't go to a restaurant. He can't go out in public. Can't go to a movie. There are more demands on his time. In this book, it says, one of the quotes here is, Brady's adjustment to worldwide fame came actually very early in his career, and it made it very difficult to go out publicly. Cars would follow him home from work. This is early in his career. At one point, during a week leading up to the 2002 Super Bowl, this is 19 years ago. This is early, Tom, before the commercials, before Giselle, before five of his Super Bowls. This is early, Tom, in Boston. It's not like he's in a cool town like Miami or LA and he had global commercials. In 2002, they were playing the Rams, 2002 Super Bowl, and he and friends decided to, let's go to Bourbon Street and go out and have a good dinner. He tried to enter a bar, just tried to enter it. A crowd formed around him so quickly and so thick that it took them down off the sidewalk. A crowd gathered around Tom. Not can I get a selfie. Not can I get an autograph. This wall of people formed around him. They couldn't get into the restaurant. As he was just walking to the restaurant. And I don't think Belichick quite got that because Belichick never went to dinner with Brady. That's well documented. He didn't get it. When you get to be this famous, and I'm not talking local TV anchor famous, those people walk out at night and it's selfies for a local TV anchor. Oh my God, I've been watching you blankety blank forever. More people pulling at you, more demands, higher pressure, you higher security. You can't go to the store. You can't go out. If you don't get it, then you get eliminated from their social circle. Even if you were buddies in high school and buddies in college, you can't ever use the term, hey, do you know who you're with? We need to, can't say stuff like that. Yeah, you ever have one of those guys? He wants to be the big shot. Hey, my buddy Tom, you know who he is? No, stars don't want you to say that stuff because Tom doesn't have to introduce himself everywhere. Dave Chappelle, the great comedian, once said, once you're famous, you're never unfamous. You may be infamous, but you're never unfamous. So just think that Brady literally couldn't walk down a street in New Orleans with famous people everywhere in New Orleans. There's entertainers, there's stars everywhere. He could not walk down the sidewalk 18 years ago, pre-Giselle, pre-commercials, pre-legend. He was just a great Pro Bowl quarterback. That's what he was back then. I mean, that's 2002. And so it's like, yeah, but Belichick never went out with him, never golfed with him, never went to dinner with him. He just thought he was Tommy. It's like, no, dude, you got Messi in the building. You have Ronaldo in the building. You got LeBron in the building. It is a different life. I mean, I know people that have vacationed with Brady, a couple people that have vacationed with him, and they all say the same thing. He's a really happy guy, great guy, just a wonderful, wonderful guy. But you can't go out to normal places. That's why he's got like homes on places that even a lot of rich people don't have. Like, you have to create a completely different life, and it's one that people have to sacrifice. They have to understand, or you can't be out with him. Well, how would Bill know what it's like? I mean, Bill knew he was famous, but...
Yeah, but I don't even know that Bill... Like, Bill's very notoriously not into social media.
At all.
He's aware of social media, but, right. He, you know, someone who doesn't invest any time in social media doesn't have any concept of the influence of that as well. So, yeah, I mean, that wasn't even the peak of social media. So imagine in the last couple years, the magnitude of stardom that Tom Brady is.
Like Beyonce. Beyonce cannot... Kim Kardashian.
No.
You can't even walk down the street.
No, to your point, that's why they just have homes and places we vacation.
They don't go to hotels. They don't go to restaurants.
Yeah.
They don't go... They can't. They can't go to a movie.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they would love to.
So, I think at some point, you know, Tom's world changed and Bill still treated him like Tommy. It's like, no, Tommy now can't even go out to a grocery
store.
Tommy
ain't here no more.
It's Tom. It's Thomas. Hour 3 next.